Welcome to Travel Talk Today with your host and founder, fast start to slow travel expert, Sharon Ann Hamilton.
Good morning. This is Travel Talk Today, here to talk with you about what do you do with your home when you decide to travel, to slow travel for 1 or 3 or 5 years. And here to teach us is Kathy Jackson, who's one of the foremost real estate agents in San Diego County. Kathy, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So you have a lot of experience in people who are moving in and moving out, but I want to talk about moving or the decisions that we have to make when we decide to slow travel. We may go off for a year and then decide to spend 5 years, but what do we do with the house we leave behind? What are our options?
Well, there are many options for what you can do with your house. If you're going to travel, let's say you're going to go for half a year, all kinds of options. But one thing for sure is it's probably good not to leave the house empty. It's because that's a consideration also, just because things can happen, whether it's a potential break-in, you know, that can happen because people might know if it's been vacant for a long time.
How do they know that?
They might monitor, you know, once in a while people, you know, if someone's in the neighborhood and they're watching carefully how much activity is going on around the house. I would say, you know, trash cans also, that's a definite way to monitor. But they're seeing no activity there, they're not seeing any trash cans being put out or people walking out of the house. That's a sign that the house may be vacant for quite a while.
It's kind of an invitation, isn't it? One of my friends who up here in Washington, across the street from her, the neighbors were gone for several months. And when they came back home, they came to the front door, put their key in the front door, and it didn't work. The front door key didn't work. And they got to looking at it, and they knocked on the door, and somebody answered their own house door. A whole family of adults had moved in there. There were like 6 people living in their big, beautiful mansion. And no one around had noticed that there was anything bizarre about all these people living there. They had the art of camouflaging too. It took a long time and a lot of legal things to get them out of the house. So I hear what you're saying. Don't leave your house empty.
That's a squatter type of activity where somebody could just move right in. And there's certain laws that can protect people in that situation. And I don't know all those laws, but it's just, you don't want to have the house looking vacant. For sure. And not only that kind of activity, but also, you know, what if a pipe broke and all of a sudden your house gets flooded or, you know, there's an electrical fire. So really good to get someone to sit in your house.
What are your options for your home when you go long, slow traveling?
There's really a ton of options, tons and tons of options. Of course, you could rent the house out, like Airbnb or VRBO. There's also travel nurses. That's a really good program where there are nurses that travel all the time, and they might need a 4-month stay or something like that, half a year. It's a lot of nurses working that way, and I understand that the pay is pretty good for the rental, depending on how, you know, large the house is. If it's a smaller size and it's a traveling nurse, get some good rental with that. So that's definitely an option for you. Also, there are sabbatical boards, if you call it that, where like at a university or something, if there's a traveling staff or professor and they want to exchange houses, they might want to put their house up on that board and say, hey, you want to consider staying at a house for a sabbatical? Ours is one, you know, whether we trade or not, whether that person trades or not, it's an option. You get your house filled up. I don't know. I really don't know if there's a fee or not with that, but at least your house is filled and you get the option of staying somewhere, I would think.
So you could stay close to a university in, for example, in Europe for the same amount of time that you're giving up your home here in the States. So that's a pretty cool exchange.
Because that really is.
Lodging is one of the very most expensive things that happens when you slow travel. If you have to pay a nightly fee to a hotel or to an Airbnb or even to a private party, if you have to pay a nightly fee, it's going to cost you a lot of money out of pocket, at least $200, $300 a night at the minimum. If you're resort traveling, that's totally different because it goes on up from there. But if you can stay for free because you've used your house as an asset for exchange, that's a great possibility.
Wonderful possibility. It could cut your travel cost in half, I would think. Maybe even more. Well, you've done that a lot, haven't you?
Yeah, we traveled for almost, I think 330 days in Europe. And we ended up only paying for four nights during that entire time. And we figured a minimum savings of $50,000. So $50,000 buys a lot more travel.
That's a lot of money for travel or anything. That's a lot, a large chunk.
Yeah.
So you made good use of that, it sounds like. Hey, and you know, here are a couple of other ideas also for how to make some money while you're gone is also, my train of thought here, you could do a short-term rental. You could do, let's say, getting a good property manager is a good idea. You want to get some references and get someone who's qualified in that. And not everybody does that. Like I wouldn't necessarily recommend as a realtor myself, I don't do rentals. You got to make sure the person that you're hiring really knows what they're doing with that.
It's a whole skill set, isn't it?
I think it is. I think it's a different skill set. And it's also getting the right tenant in there and interviewing the tenant and having some safeguards with the paperwork, the interview and things like that, references. So getting a good short-term rental person, leasing agent, would be good. Have you ever thought about the possibility of renting some storage space out? Now, I don't think this would necessarily help you with the look of the vacant house type thing. But I mean, you might have two things to do. You could get someone in like a short-term rental, whether it's a nurse or just someone that needs short-term from a company, a corporate type rental. That's another one that's a good type of a rental option along with Airbnb, but the short-term rental people might even be better for the longer length of time. But rent out your garage if it's cleared up enough. Make a little extra money if somebody wants to put their camper in there or a boat or just some extra stuff. Be able to make a couple hundred dollars extra a month, right?
Yeah. So one of the questions that I get when people are considering long-term and slow travel is, what do I do with all the stuff that's in my house? Now you, Kathy Jackson, you are a minimalist. So in no time at all, you could whip all the things that you hold dear, put them in a small box and tuck them in your son's garage, and then that would be it. But most of people are like me, and we have collections, not collecting things like Hummel plates, but I'm talking, we gather things that we think are necessary. We have the kitchen toys that we need, the special blenders, and we have things in our home office. And then we have my entire video set up in my home office and a printer and some storage space for other things that I need. And my things in my closet. I have a closet that's a master closet and it's stuffed full of things. So what do I do with all my stuff? One idea I've heard is just donate it all and start all over again in 5 years when you come back. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, that's an option. And you've even purged some things before. I have too. Once in a while, I go in phases where I want to streamline a little bit more. It's like, oh, I don't need this necessarily. You could just purge, or you could take things and just box them up like you're moving. So if you're going to have someone in your house, and hopefully you've got enough space in your garage, or a shed or something like that, you know, just pack it up well, get it out of the way, because nobody wants to stay in a house where it's really cluttered. Also, another thing is, like, let's say the kitchen, that's an important area, like for an Airbnb or any kind of person renting your place. They want a kitchen that's not too cluttered, that's got usable items in there. That's an area I would really concentrate on, and just eliminating a lot of extra glasses or pans, put them in a box or give some away to Goodwill if you want to streamline that kitchen area.
A lot of times I'd see pictures of people's homes for short-term rentals or Airbnbs, and they have all this. They have a coffee maker and a blender and a toaster and an oven and a microwave all sitting on the counter. And it makes it look small, and it makes it look so cluttered, it's not even inviting. But also, I see pictures of houses that have absolutely nothing on the counters. And to me, it looks cold and uninviting. So where's the happy medium with that? I don't keep any machines on the counter. I put them in the cupboards above or below and take them out when I use them and put them back when I don't. And then I have some decorating things on the counter for interest.
That's a wonderful question. And, you know, some ideas you can get is from, for example, even on YouTube, looking at cooking videos, you could see how things are decorated just to get an idea. But yeah, you're absolutely right about the big appliances. Mm-hmm. I would leave the coffee maker out, probably. Toaster in a good, convenient spot. But all the other little things are the appliances. Many other things, like even the espresso machine and stuff like that. I put those away because people do like to see us streamlined, but with having the necessities out, like the toaster and the coffee maker. Probably the microwave if it's not mounted somewhere. Want to have that out. But yes, very good question. I know with my kitchen, it's small enough that if I had much out at all, in fact, I gave away my Instapot and, what's the other thing called? It's not a toaster oven, but it looks like the Instapot, but it's not. Anyway, they're a pretty good size. I got rid of those actually. Yep. I don't want to have them. I don't want to make the room for them.
And then that goes, well, I'm thinking about San Diego real estate, and you were talking about how the prices have just gone up and up and up. And So if someone's traveling from a location where the prices are going up and up and up, would you recommend that they sell their house and then try to find something else when they come back?
Oh, that's another interesting question. Yeah, we are seeing prices continually going up a lot of areas, but especially here in San Diego. And I think if you're sure you're going to come back, you might consider keeping your place unless you wanted to downsize. So if you did want to downsize, you might consider just selling your place. Although keep in mind, when you come back, it's almost 100%, not quite, but going to be more expensive, whatever you buy. But I would say that if you go, we're seeing prices continually going up, could be 8 or 10%. In the past, it's been even more than that. Prices will. So rent your house out if you want, unless you really want to downsize. Now, if you really want to downsize, you could do it before your trip if you wanted to.
So what you're saying, what you're suggesting is you might sell your big house, buy a more appropriate one that fits your new lifestyle house, and then rent that new one out before you travel. And you could do it that way, and that way you would be able to put a little cash in your pocket, probably.
It's definitely an interesting idea, and certainly an option for someone, because if you've really been concentrating on that, let's say you're getting closer to retirement, or the kids are gone, or whatever it is, it may be time just to downsize. And yeah, people are capitalizing on, good returns from having owned a house for a while.
Yeah. So there's some good tax benefits if you sell after your certain age. You don't have to pay capital gains on more than, just check with your tax accountant for that. But it's you work all that out before you leave, so you're not sorry when you come back. I know people who have sold and left California, and then they decide they want to come back 10 years later, and then they're totally in sticker shock.
Yes, they can't believe it. I hear that a lot of times too. But why didn't we buy then? But it's never too late to buy, but it's if you're going to downsize anyway, it might be a good time.
If yes.
You get all that stuff organized.
Downsize. Yes, good idea. So basically, when you, excuse me, so as a person who is considering slow traveling and being gone 1 or 2 or more years and learning about the world, your expenses for living elsewhere are exactly precisely the same, except in a few countries, the food costs, for example, are really low. So whether you're gone or whether you live at your home, the expenses, except for your house mortgage or rent, are exactly the same. So you buy food, whether you're in Paris, England, or America, you buy the same amount of food and you cook similar things, probably. You might have a little bit more dining out experiences when you travel. You will have transportation expenses. So at home, you have your car, but often there's a car payment. Sometimes you're done with the car payments. So the transportation you have, depending on where you go and stay. If you stay in a city in Europe, you're not going to probably want to have a car. This sounds odd, but people in Europe, many people don't own cars. They use public transportation. And the trains and the buses are wonderful. They hook you up for all the sites that you want to see. And so that might be a little bit more, it'll be different. That'll be your part of your adventure, is to figure out how to do that. And then your medical insurance will be the same. You have the same cost. And if you travel overseas, the recommendation is to make sure your medical insurance covers wherever you go, or pick up some medical insurance that covers globally. So it's not really, doesn't really cost as much as people think it does to go live in Europe for a year.
Did you ever, at one point when you were over in Europe, did you ever think about just living there full time? Did you give thought to that?
I did, but Dan didn't. So you have to be in agreement with your spouse.
That's true.
But we were there during COVID, so it was a whole different experience.
I bet. But that's interesting that you found that your expenses were quite similar.
You know,
and you did the pet sitting, didn't you?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. And mention that. That's a great
house sitting. As a matter of fact, that brings up I have a friend who teaches people how to find luxury houses to sit. And what she said, and I think it's true here, I haven't read the contracts yet, but if a home, let's say on the coast of Spain, is a second home for a wealthy person, and these are the kinds of things that are available when you know how to get them. That's one of the things that I teach in my class, is how to get these. But anyway, what she said is that if there's a problem, like you were talking about, the pipe was leaking and caused a flood in the house, it has been empty for 30 days or more, insurance doesn't cover.
Oh, God.
How's that for shit? Yeah. Ow.
That is something.
And I haven't read my insurance policy here because I haven't wanted to be away from this house for 30 days since we've owned it. But it's a good thing to check on your own home if you're thinking about leaving it empty because you don't want to move out of it to use it for a rental. Pretty devastating.
That would be devastating, and it could easily happen. Something like that could happen. So all the more reason to have somebody stay in it or rent it, right? Either one.
Yeah. There are platforms, and that's one of the things I teach, is how to find these platforms. A lot of options for people to go and live elsewhere in many other countries in the world. Each one has its own charm. Each place has its own charm. We, as Americans, I think we get too used to, you know, well, there's a Costco there and a Walmart and we want to go in and buy all of our things there. And in most other countries, you cannot find that, although they are spreading around the world. You learn how to manage going to get your groceries every day because your refrigerator in your house that you're staying in is kind of on the small side. So you can't stuff it full like we do ours. We learn different styles and ways of being that are all part of the charm of traveling.
I feel like I'm a European buyer of groceries already, just because I go sometimes several times a week, just enough for the meal. I know it's not very good planning. I do know that, but I can see that that's how. I've heard that from you and others, that that's the way to shop.
And then what would you recommend for someone who is just on the fence about how to evaluate whether they should rent their house, sell it, get a house sitter? Well, what would you recommend the key things that you yourself want to know about in making those decisions?
Yeah, that's a good, very good question. Well, sometimes people aren't sure if they're going to come back or not. I've talked to people before that might take off to Portugal or someplace. They might go for 2 years, 3 years, think they'll be back. Think that way. If you're kind of iffy about it and possibly want to downsize anyway, I think that's a bad time to sell the house. You're talking about combining it with travel, but you're going to be traveling for a long time. Yeah, if you're thinking that way anyway, and you're not sure what you're going to do, or you've thought about downsizing, that might be a good time to capitalize on all the appreciation you've gotten over the last several years, instead of trying to have someone manage the rental the whole time. Up to you, but that's probably the way I would look at it. If you've been thinking about moving anyway, and you're going to be gone for years.
And there's a big movement of people who are moving away from the States because of the cost of living, cost of housing, especially. And people are moving to Mexico or Panama. It's a big hotspot right now. Portugal is very popular. The big new one is Croatia. Beautiful weather. It's very much like Southern California, really. And it's a little coolish in the winter, but mostly sunny days and nice, warm-hearted people like California.
Nice, nice. What was when you were visiting places, because you went to several different countries, what was a couple of your favorites when you were visiting countries where you felt kind of at home?
Well, let me see, at home. Our first, second, third pet sit, house sit in France was in the southern part of France, and it was in rural territory with rolling hills and a tiny castle. And it was ancient. And the person who brought us there just had one dog, and her home was large. She served the people who were pilgrims on the pilgrimage for the 500-mile pilgrimage that goes over the mountains. Nobody was there doing that while we were taking care of her place. But from there, we could visit all these villages and towns, and we had friends who came to see us from Bordeaux. And that area was nice. It was really beautiful, and the weather was nice. And I think probably the southern part of France, but in the countryside, is one of our favorites. There's another little town called Saint-Antonin-Noble-du-Val. How's that for a town name? That was a medieval village right on a river. And we stayed there for a couple of weeks, and it was just gorgeous. It was during the COVID time, so none of the stores were open except the grocery store was open and the bakery was open. So we got a lot of good walking in and just enjoyed the sights and the rolling hills, and it was just beautiful. And Bordeaux was not that far away. And Bordeaux itself during COVID was interesting because grocery stores were open and a couple of the cafes, you could sit on the streets and eat and look at people. That's a pastime in France. Eat and look at people. They had a major, like an outdoor mall. And even during COVID, you could see hundreds of people walking up and down this outdoor mall, even if stores were not open. Some were, but not too many because of the rules. Without masks, we were like pretty shocked. People were walking around without masks. So in different countries, it took a while to get people on board with the masks, for sure.
People saved some money at that time, didn't they?
Yeah.
If they didn't order online or something. Yeah.
That's right. So I haven't, one thing that's on my list is Portugal. I hear that it's really beautiful and it's like California was 100 years ago. So I'm going to go look at it. So
that sounds really nice. I'd like to go there too. What about Brazil? Have you been there?
Nope. I have not been to South America below Costa Rica. It was gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. So on your wish list, I know you have grandkids. So it's kind of hard to be away from them for a while, but do you have a trip planned?
Oh, gosh, I do have grandkids and I've got one more coming soon. Excited about that little guy. I don't have a trip soon, but I'm thinking, and I'm thinking about, I did just go just to Chicago. That was just a short, trip within the U.S., but I'd like to go to Portugal, Brazil. I went to Hawaii earlier the year. Loved going to Hawaii, even though that's in the United States. Loved it. Just, I always kind of like countrysides. It's a little bit of a preference, even though the culture of a larger city is fun too, and the foods and all that. But really enjoyed Hawaii and seeing the volcano monument.
Uh-huh.
Pretty neat, and some of the beautiful coastline. So I'd say next time, I've loved Italy in the past when I've gone to Italy, like Tuscany and Cinque Terre, Rome. I would love to go back there, even though there's other places I could certainly go see. So
yeah,
when the time is right, I'll make some plans and do that.
Yeah, take your grandkids with you. One of the best educations you can give your kids and grandkids is taking them traveling with you. Some of the people's questions that I get when we talk about slow travel is, well, what about my kids? Well, I say, what about them? Well, they go to school. And they go, what better school is there?
Oh, you're
than
right.
Travel. Then travel. Don't miss anything that they can't catch up on. And bringing them for 6 months on the road or a year on the road is not going to put them back, but it's going to put them ahead, because chances are they'll be picking up other languages. And that's really great for their brain development, no matter what the age is. And there's all kinds of benefits that I know of when people travel with their kids that they had never even considered. We ended up taking time off and our son out of school, and we went off to Greece for several months. And he ended up speak Greek because he had a friend, a little, was just about his age, and they played at the beach all day long. So he's picked up Greek in just a very short amount of time. It's pretty amazing. And then he uses it even today because he goes to Greece and visits family members.
Right. And how fun, because that's your heritage, part of your heritage anyway. How fun. So, and children pick up languages a lot easier than adults, don't they?
Yes, they do. I don't think there's any reason not to travel, actually. That would be me. There's no reason not to travel. And slow traveling is definitely way to go, because I've been on a tour before and I could barely whip my head around to see the sights, and we're off to another one. And it's very uncomfortable to move every night, every night, every night. And then I've been on cruises and it's a little bit different. You don't have to move every night, but the places that you go, you've got a short amount of time in each port to go explore your excursions, but living somewhere for months at a time gives you the real cultural experience that I look for and that I encourage my clients to look for, is that cultural immersion in the language. The rhythm of the day is different when you're in Spain, as it is different when you're in Greece, and different when you're in France. And I'm just talking Europe right now, but also Asia, the Middle East, all around the Caribbean, all around Australia, New Zealand. Everyone has their style and their rhythm and flow. And stepping into that is cultural immersion that you get when you're there for a time. You can't get it on a short vacation.
Oh, not a short week or even 2 weeks. It's just, you've had the enjoyment of just really getting to know the culture and people. I mean, that's part of the culture, but just time to talk with people and sitting in a little town for a week at a time, instead of moving all the time.
Yeah.
And you could really soak it in and enjoy it like you're totally living there full time, what it sounds like.
Great. So thank you, Kathy Jackson,
from
San Diego Realist Guru. That's who she is. She's one of the top real estate helpers of all time in the county of San Diego. And if you go there and you're considering purchasing, or if you live there considering selling, Kathy would be your go-to person.
Thanks.
I appreciate your time and thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe. To learn more about Fast Start to Slow Travel, or send an email to Sharon Ann for more info and updates on the upcoming workshop.